Okay, we're on. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is Keith Bearden, president of Phi Beta Mu International, and we're talking this morning with Professor John Whitwell. It is correct, right? Is that your
correct
title? Okay.
Yes.
John was our outstanding bandmaster in 2008. We're so happy to have him on the line today to interview him about some of his career and some highlights. So, John, let's just start out with how did you get started in band, maybe your beginning director, high school directors, or other influential directors during that time?
I'm originally from Tennessee, central Tennessee area, Centerville, and more notably Cow Holler, Tennessee, which was a very small, wide spot in the road in the Centerville School District. And we moved to Michigan in the summer of 1951 because there was not great employment opportunities for my dad in Tennessee. He was an automobile mechanic, truck driver, et cetera, and he had three brothers who had already gone to Michigan and found employment, according to them, the first day they were there. And so he was the last of the four brothers to leave Tennessee. And we moved to River Rouge, Michigan, which is a Detroit suburb to the south along the Detroit River. And that was in 1951. And I was between the third and fourth grade. And we went to what was my first parade for July 4th, 1951, in River Rouge, Michigan, and it was led by the River Rouge High School Band. First time I'd heard a band, seen a band, didn't know the word band or any of the instruments, but was disappointed in the fall of the fourth grade when I was assigned to an elementary music class. And I went up to the music teacher after that and tried to explain to her this group I had seen in a parade, and that's really what I wanted to do. And she said, well, you have to be in the fifth grade to do that. You have to wait a year. Mm-hmm. But I teach a after-school piano class 50 cents a week, and that would help you if you want to be in the band. So I did that and became a band member in the fall of the fifth grade. I don't remember the band director testing us. I just remember when he got to me in the fall of the fifth grade, he said, you have really long arms. I think you're a trombone player.
Amazing.
From that beginning, I had a great time. I started taking private lessons. It was pretty much expected at that time, and the private teacher for all the brass students was Mac Carr. He was the high school band director in River Rouge. He was really an oboist with 2 degrees from the University of Michigan, and he would have played in Nicholas Falcone's band before William D. Ravelli. He graduated in 1929. And his career was all in River Rouge, and he was very good to me. He was from that age of the tyrant band conductor, as we call them today, which I think is not only not accurate, but it's not fair. It sort of paints everybody with the same brush, but he was very demanding, and there were no excuses ever. And you never missed a rehearsal. You were never late. You just did what you're supposed to. And I loved it. I loved everything about that. And we moved to another community at the end of my ninth grade year, just south along the Detroit River to Wyandotte, from which I graduated in 1960. And they had very good players, but it just I missed Matt Carr and my good friends in the River Rouge band, but Wyandotte was also very good to me.
Wow. So from there, at that meager beginning, after you said Cal Holler, Tennessee?
Yes.
You went to college where?
Well, I went to Michigan Christian College. I was in a disagreement with my parents. I wanted to go to the University of Michigan because Matt Carr would take us on buses to hear the Michigan Symphony Band under Ravelli. And my parents were conservative religiously, and they said, no, we don't have much money for you to go to school at all, but none of it's going to Ann Arbor. And so I went to a Church of Christ affiliated school that had just opened a year earlier in Rochester College, Michigan Christian College, now known as Rochester College. And it turned out to be a very good thing. They didn't even have a band, but they had a choral director. I sang in the choir for 2 years, sang in the men's quartet, and he had graduated from Abilene Christian. And I just idolized him, Fred Alexander, and who was an oboist, and he said, what you need to do is go to Texas. Texas is where it's happening. And you need to go to Abilene Christian and play in Doug Fry's band, which is where Fred Alexander had gone to school.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and it was 2 years at Michigan Christian and then three at Abilene Christian, graduated in 65. And I was going to stay in Texas to teach, but I still had this University of Michigan, William D. Ravelli thing, and I came to see my parents after I graduated from ACU. I had interviewed for a couple jobs, and so I went to the University of Michigan to find about enrolling for summer school to do master's work. And the man that became my advisor at Michigan, Dr. Emil Holz, H-O-L-Z, said, you would be wise if you want to come to school here to stay in the state and teach. It'll be a lot more convenient, be a lot cheaper. And he sent me up to use the University of Michigan Placement Service. And within a couple days, I had taken a job, which I did not plan to do. I think it was providential. And I stayed in Michigan for 16 years, started teaching in 65. And I did my master's in the summers and got to know William D. Ravelli, Elizabeth Green, Robert Reynolds, Glenn Holtz, the trombone teacher, was spectacular. It was a good experience.
That was a great move. So what year did you start teaching? And you said 1960?
65,
okay.
And my first job was at Northwest Jackson. They had one band director. That's all they'd ever had, and they were adding a second one because they were growing pretty quickly. So my job the first year was to teach seventh grade beginners, and then I said, you know, that's not where you should be starting beginners. We need to be doing that in the sixth grade. And they said, we know that, but it's too late for this year, but you start 7th grade beginners this year, and next year you can start 6 and 7. And then the third year, 1967, you'll have all those kids back in the 7, 8, 9 junior high school. And that excited me, of starting my own beginners and then inheriting my success and failures as a beginning teacher.
So did those? Yeah, that's sometimes detrimental, isn't it?
Well, it is. I learned right away that I was not a good clarinet teacher, and I had to get help very quickly with the clarinets.
Did those classes meet daily?
Say again. I'm sorry.
Did those classes meet daily, or how many times a week?
They met three times a week, and were schedule by the time I got there. They were in little bands of about 30 kids. It was just however they'd been scheduled by the counselors. And I also, the first year, taught two math classes to round out my schedule.
Oh, wow.
I had had 0 hours in university study as a math teacher, but I was a good math student in high school. And this was seventh grade math, long division, fractions.
Right.
And actually, I didn't mind it at all. But that's not why I went there to do that. I only did that for 1 year.
Do you recall your first year salary?
$5,000.
$5,000. Then
yeah.
You moved from there to a high school band? And.
Well, I stayed in that district for 10 years. I did beginners for 2 years, and then I did the 7, 8, 9 junior high for 2 years. And they wanted me to go to the high school job, and they said, we need you to keep the junior high for 1 year. We know we need a third director. So after 1 year, you'll be at the high school and assist at the junior high with a new person. But it took 3 years to get them to follow through on what they said they were going to do. So I did 7 through 12 for 3 years, and then they hired a young man, Miles Mazur, another trombone player, the last thing we needed. I needed a clarinet teacher, but he was a better clarinet teacher than I was. But I stayed 3 more years and assisted Miles at the junior high, and he assisted me at the high school. Between us, we had about 600 students, and so I was there a total of 10 years and then went to Ann Arbor to the newest high school, Huron High School, where Edward Downing had been. And Ed had left to become a banker, and then after a couple of years doing that, he became a vice president at Interlochen and then retired as president of Interlochen Center for the Arts.
Hmm. So how long were you at the high school in Ann Arbor?
6 years, from 75 to 81. And those were great, great years. The first year was very difficult following Ed Downing. He was such a great teacher, great musician. No one could follow Ed Downing. But I grew a lot. The summer that I moved to Ann Arbor was the summer that I was finishing my master's degree, and the new director of bands at the University of Michigan, Robert Reynolds, was new. And I played in his first summer band. And he was the first person to call me the day that I took the Ann Arbor job and said, I hear you're coming to town. Congratulations. I drive right by your school every day. And then within a month of school starting, I was at one of his concerts or a rehearsal or something, and he said, what time does your top band rehearse? And I told him, he said, you know, I drive right by there right before that because I stay at home and study in the mornings. And he said, I can come to your rehearsal any day you want. And I asked him a lot.
That's wonderful.
But it was like doing another degree at the University of Michigan that I didn't have to pay for.
That's wonderful.
Just watching him and trying to figure out and trying to, he wouldn't tell you a lot. Like Dr. Ravelli or Matt Carr, he would ask me questions that I couldn't answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying, as an old guy today, trying to figure out the answers to some of those questions.
So did you make the move then from that high school to university teaching?
I did, to Abilene Christian.
Back to Abilene Christian.
Yeah,
so now, let's pause right there
and
tell your audience how important you felt starting at the beginning level and working your way through the system, how much that affected you being a better university director.
Well, I think for me it was the perfect thing to do, and I had as I guess a lot of us do, as a high school senior, I didn't even need to go to college. I was already better than my band director, and I had all the answers. And then by the time I was about to graduate, did student teaching, I had gone from boundless, endless confidence to zero confidence, because I knew how much I didn't know and how much I couldn't do. And for me, starting beginners was the perfect way. I mean, I had all the classes that everybody has, flute class, clarinet class, but it's not the same taking that class as it is starting beginners and having to tell them day after day how to form the embouchure. No, it doesn't go in the case that way. You don't open the case upside down and spill, you know, I mean, just all the things that that we learn through repeated instruction.
Right.
And I brought in a lot of people to help me. I was in a place where I could do that, and it was more for me than it was for the students. By helping the students, I was learning myself.
Absolutely.
And then to do a second year of beginners, and then to go with those beginners into a junior high school, was glorious. I mean, it was just, I finally had a band, a real band, and I had started every one of those kids.
Well, you get to see and experience their growth as a musician.
Oh, absolutely. And the first state festival with the 789 band was in April of 1968, my first year. In Michigan, if you get a first division rating at district festival, then you're entitled to go on to the state festival. It's a remnant of the old national contest. And you win in advance. And I got the envelope from the Michigan School Band and Orchestra Association a couple weeks before, and I saw that we played in a gymnasium on this Saturday in April in Kalamazoo, and we played mid-afternoon, and William D. Ravelli was one of the adjudicators. I was scared to death and physically sick because I thought, I can't do this. I'm not ready to do this. I prayed for snow in April and the buses to break down. But he was the kindest, most insightful adjudicator, along with Harry Beaton and Leonard Falcone and Elizabeth Green. And he was understanding that I was a very young teacher, and I learned so much on that Saturday. He was very kind to us. He liked us. But he said, there were a couple things. One of the pieces we played was Sarabande and Gavotte by Corelli, arranged by Johnston. And I thought I was taking a lot of espressivo liberties on the first movement, the Sarabande. And I worried that Ravelli might not like what I had done to interpret the piece, but I couldn't change it. You know, you just can't do that. And so we went ahead and played. And he said about Corelli, he said, I loved your Italiano espressivo.
Mm-hmm.
However, you didn't do nearly enough. You should go much further.
True.
And the other thing he said was there was a passage that was doubled or tripled between the flutes and clarinets and maybe the oboe. And he said, in view of the unusually mature flute section and the youthful clarinet section, I would subdue the clarinets and bring the flutes up, and I would color this passage flute.
Well, that's interesting.
I had never heard anybody talk about that concept, at least not that I remembered.
Mature versus youthful, I like that.
I mean, what he was saying is you were a bad clarinet teacher. Just hide those kids, you know.
So let's jump around up to Abilene Christian now and your university years.
Yeah, I never really started out or thought about teaching on the university level. I never saw myself that way. I always wanted to be a public school music educator. And so when the opportunity offered itself, I it was very hard to, I mean, that's a career change. It's like you know, becoming something else. I didn't feel prepared to do that. But the years in Ann Arbor and going to Mr. Reynolds' rehearsals and concerts and having him come to my rehearsals, when we played at the Midwest, he was my guest conductor.
Wonderful.
And he was very encouraging, and I knew the school because I'd gone there. So I thought, well, maybe I'm supposed to try this, you know, and I learned a lot. I mean, I just learned a lot. You know, in the public schools, if you don't like the clarinet teacher, you get a new one. And at the university level, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
And I kind of enjoyed being unilateral in my decision making, and learned abruptly that's not how it works here.
It's back to me. So from Abilene Christian, you went to Michigan State, right?
No, to Stephen F. Austin.
That's right, Stephen F. Austin.
Yeah, I was at ACU 6 years, and I loved it. I loved the students. I had some great students there. The size of the school, though, and the Department of Music dictates that you have to use a lot of non-majors in the top ensembles because there aren't full studios of anything or almost anything. And we grew the studios. I mean, we added 4 or 5 teachers. Alan Teal, whom you will remember, was one of those guys that we added. And he I think we had 1 percussion major or 2 his first year. And before his first class of recruiting, which was Brian Youngblood at TCU, before Brian graduated, Alan had a full studio. And we recruited... oh my goodness, Eric Wilson.
Mm-hmm. At Baylor now.
In fact, we took him away from Texas Tech, of all things.
Shame on
you. But and I still can't figure out why, because I think I just pestered him more than Tech. But anyway, it was a great time, and we. I did what I'd been doing in Ann Arbor by bringing in a lot of guests to help me. Bob Reynolds, Larry Ratcliffe, William D. Ravelli, Elizabeth Green, and it was a good time, and we grew a lot, and I grew a lot from the opportunity to do that. We also hired a young guy from Texas Tech, Gary Lewis, that Alan Teal told me about to teach tuba euphonium in my next to my last year, because I went there as the trombone tuba euphonium teacher, band director, instrumental music ed guy,
right.
And no assistant or whatever, and I just needed some help because I had a full time job of just low brass guys. And so they agreed to hire somebody to teach tuba euphonium. That was Gary. And then once I got to know Gary, we created a full-time job for the next year to be the assistant band director.
And then when you went to Stephen F. Austin, he took over as the director of bands.
Right, right. And there was already a tenured associate director of bands, Steve Peterson. And we only overlapped 1 year, but it was a great year. And then he went to Northwestern to finish his doctorate with John Painter. And as it turned out, during that summer that he was going back to finish his doctorate, Dale Launis left Northwestern, and Steve got the job. They agreed to let him finish his degree as a faculty member.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So when you went to Stephen F. Austin, how many years were you there before Michigan State?
6 years.
So six at ACU and six at Stephen F. Austin.
Right. Actually, every high school job I ever had and every college job I had before Michigan State, 6 years seemed to be my limit.
The magic number.
And I got really nervous, Keith, at Michigan State in the sixth year. I thought, I don't know if I can do seven or not. You know, maybe I need to take my stories on the road. And
well, you've had a wonderful career, and we all really admire what you've done, and you've affected so many people and lives. Do you see any, or what changes have you seen through the years, whether they be positive or negative, and you see any problems or anything with the current trends where we need to change directions as a profession?
Well, I've seen, as have you, and many guys our age, we've seen a lot of evolution, and it's not a dramatic event, a single dramatic event, but it's a lot of small events that adds up to change. I think one of the greatest changes that we've seen is going from the traditional big band tradition to the wind ensemble. And I remember Raffelli, of course, he was a big band person through all of his career. And that actually started with the National Band Contest in 1926 when they defined what a band was by instrumentation. And it was more than 100 players. You had to have an E-flat flute, you had to have an E-flat clarinet, alto clarinet, bass clarinet. It was well over 100 players, and you were docked so many tenths of a point for every one you didn't have. Didn't matter right. That your school enrollment was smaller than what this band would be.
And those 24-member clarinet sections.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's what I grew up with, and that was the model. And but you could see over time, the wind ensemble becoming more influential. And I remember times at the Midwest Clinic, maybe in the 70s, early 80s, when it seemed to me like there were two groups of people teaching on the college level, the big band people and the wind ensemble people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you the story that Raffelli came to Abilene Christian the first time in 83-84. It was the spring of 84, and I told him, I gave him my programs for the previous 2+ years, and I said, I want, when this is over at the end of the week, I want you to give me lots of advice. Because this is more for me than it is for the students. Students are going to love you, but I need your help. And so on the way to the airport, I said, okay, it's time. Let's have school here. And he said two things. I've noticed on your programs you have some great guest conductors and you have some great soloists, guest artists. Soloists, but I haven't seen one composer. he said, you and your students are going to learn the most when you interact with great composers. You will be so vulnerable, it'll scare you to death, and you will grow a lot. So I said, okay, I know you're right, and I'll do that. And then he said, the second thing is hard. You will find it hard to accept that I'm saying this. But he said, I've been retired since 1971, and I've thought a lot about the wind ensemble. And the wind ensemble is where the profession is going. Get on board.
Wow, that's good advice. That's amazing.
And that shocked me, because I had always been the standard bearer for the big band, you know.
And he was he began all that, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Hinesley and Beechin and all those guys.
Yep. But, you know, I think it's hard for us to see and accept change when we're in the middle of it.
Sure.
We need some time and distance and perspective. But so I think that's certainly one of the things. Another thing is the I miss the time when we played more transcriptions. As an educational model, Bob Reynolds asked me a question once. I asked him to help me pick a score, the piece that I was going to play at the Michigan Festival that spring. And he said, and I took three scores to him that I was thinking about. He didn't even look at my scores.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, it depends on what you think it means to be musically educated. And how will the selection of any of those three pieces contribute to the musical education of your students? Now, I was used to teachers that just told me what to do, rather forcefully,
mm-hmm.
and I accepted it. So I left that meeting with Mr. Reynolds a little frustrated, because he didn't tell me what to do. And I think a well-rounded education includes everything. It's not a narrow thing, like if we're going to school to the university level as a doctoral student to study only the wind music from 1885 to 1915 for eight winds or more.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty narrow. And we've become more narrow in a lot of facets of higher education.
Is the ink dry yet?
Yep. Well, and I missed at Michigan State teaching music education classes. And they were, because that wasn't in my job description, hadn't been at Michigan State for 40 years. And I think a mistake that we have made as college conductors, faculty members, is giving up music education to other people.
No, I agree. Definitely.
And it just happened. You know, we kind of gave it up so we could be artist conductors. And using probably the professional orchestra as a model. But I'm a music educator.
Do you have a favorite composition that you've worked over the years?
You know, not really. I like if it's great music, I love it all. I remember the first time I heard the Hindemith Symphony, I thought, that's not a pretty piece. I grew up and all band music was pretty. you know,
right,
and
right.
And it didn't pass the test. And but I was able to perform all of the Hindemith Symphony with the high school in Ann Arbor, one of the last years I was there. And the more I got into that, the more I just loved it. It didn't sound strident anymore.
It has to grow on you.
Yeah, taste, you know, I mean, we just keep growing. I used to tell my students that if you don't like this piece because it's outside your experience, that means you're a musical bigot.
That's very good.
And there are broccoli bigots, and there are political bigots, there's religious bigots, and there's musical bigots. And if you're going to be educated, you cannot be bigoted in any facet of your life.
That's very good advice.
That just means that you're ignorant, and I'm gonna fix that today.
Well, so, you've covered several of our ending questions. You've covered the old masters that influenced you at an early age.
Yeah.
You named many, many names that were very in all of our lives, formative through recordings and clinics and whatever. And you've also told the young directors a very important thing just now about being a music bigot.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to think, Keith, until I was pretty close to the end of my career, that I was going to leave Michigan State University and I was going to get a job probably in Texas starting beginners. And because I wanted to complete the circle and go back where I started, because I could do a lot better job today. I would be a great clarinet teacher today. But I did, I wasn't able to do that, but I still love going into the public schools and seeing Deborah Haberet, or, I mean, some of the great, great people that teach in the district where I live, and they are so good. They're the backbone of everything we do.
Yes. So what advice would you give to young directors just entering the career?
Have a well-rounded life, not just a band director. A lot of us sacrifice parts of our existence because we're so committed to our profession. And I think we become tired, and we lose some of the vitality that I've seen in people like Robert Reynolds and Elizabeth Green and William D. Rovelli, because we're not well-rounded. There's not life after band. We stay at school. And I think a well-rested, well-rounded teacher is a more effective teacher.
Very good advice. And you and I got to finish our career, even though we had an airplane adventure in San Antonio.
Oh, my goodness. You know, you need to write a book and then turn it into a movie or something.
Well, that would have been a good one. That would have been a good chapter.
I thought we were not going to live through the experience.
I've told that story many, many times.
That was in San Antonio, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, with our friend Dan Schreiber and his flying ranch that we went out to on the detour on the way to the airport. And I remember buzzing
in
Hemisphere Tower thinking we were going to be arrested.
Oh, man.
Well, I really appreciate you giving us time today, and we'll post this on our international website, and we're very honored that you were outstanding bandmaster. And that was 2008.
Yes. Yes.
And that's wonderful. So you'll be able to listen to the others on there, and hopefully these interviews will be a great insight to young teachers and then all teachers, actually.
Well,
I've enjoyed visiting with you.
Well, you're very kind, and I've enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
You have a good day, and thank you so much, and we'll see you at the next convention.
I'll be there.
Great. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.